My name is Jill Henderson. I'm 57 years old, and today is December 17th, 2022. I'm located in Austin, Texas, and I am having a conversation with my brother, Tommy Dawkins.
And I'm Tommy Dawkins, 49 years old. Today is still December 17th, 2022. I'm also in Austin, Texas, and I will be interviewed by my sister, Jill Henderson.
Well, thank you, Tommy, for having this conversation. I just wanted to have some background for our family genealogy going forward. So, yeah, tell me about a person who has been the kindest to you in your life.
Person that's been the kindest to me in my life. There's so many people that have been kind, but as far as kindest, I would probably have to say our mom. She was always forgiving, and you know, even when we're doing things wrong, mom had a way of making it a positive. And so she was good at, she was definitely good at nurturing us. And she gave us confidence. She gave me confidence, at least. The confidence that she had in me, kind of built me up instead of broke me down in those times where I was doing things that I shouldn't have. So I would definitely say mom.
Okay. And who do you think has made the biggest impact in your life and the one thing that they taught you?
So I was thinking about that. I looked through the list of questions you sent, and I was going through the list of people that I could potentially mention. Dad, of course, was at the top of the list. But I would truthfully have to give it to Granddaddy QC. Granddad was always the type of person that was busy, so he was hard to keep up with, but he was busy in a good way. He was always working on a project, building something, off on the move, trying to go pick something up, drop something off, do something for the community. So he taught me community and giving, and he also taught me work ethic. I can remember being young when I would go over to their house. Granddad was so busy. When I was a kid, it seemed like he was too busy for us, so I didn't want to bother him. And so Grandma would kind of nudge me to go out. Granddad would be in the garage doing something, and I'd go out there, and he wasn't the best at explaining things, so he just kind of expected you to watch him. But as a kid, you didn't know if he was just tired of you being around, or if he didn't want you there or what. And so I took it as kind of a being shrugged off, and so I would come back in the house and start watching TV. Grandma would come in the room and be like, what are you doing? I thought you were in a garage with your granddad. And I'd be like, Grandma, he doesn't want me out there. And so she would push me out there, and she would go out there with me, and she would yell at them, and they would go back and forth for a minute. And then I would think I was in trouble for getting him in trouble. But it turns out he actually did want me out there, and he wanted me watching and paying attention. And like later in days like that, Grandma would explain it to me that evening when I would stay the night. And so eventually I started to understand. But there was one time in my younger adulthood where Granddad was actually doing some renovation to one of their houses, the White House that was right off of Randolph. And he needed help taking a refrigerator up to the second floor, the unit on the second floor. And so he called me, he asked me to grab a buddy and come over and help him. And so I went, drove and picked up my buddy. We were kind of messing around, dragging. And I told my buddy, I was like, we got to hurry up. My granddad's impatient. So we gotta get there before he loses patience. And so by the time we got there, not only did granddad already have the refrigerator out of the truck that he hauled it in, he had it halfway up the stairs by itself. And to this day, me and my buddy were like, I still don't understand how my granddad got the refrigerator up halfway, up the stairs. It was a narrow stairway, and it was a steep stairway, and the refrigerator was a full-size kitchen refrigerator. It wasn't like a little half fridge that you have for college. And so seeing him do things like that just made me understand that there's a will to accomplishing your goals that you can achieve as long as you really put your mind to it.
Good answer. So if you were to have a happy place, a place where you could visit in your mind when you're feeling kind of sad, what would that place look like and who would be with you?
I think my happy place would be growing up on Erie Street, before I got to high school, so my early days, while you were still there, and Quincy, was a little young guy trying to hang out and keep up with me, kind of like I used to try to keep up with granddad. That place really felt like a forever home. And so it felt like a place that we were gonna grow up in, bring our kids back to as adults and grow old and argue about who was gonna take over the home and who was gonna live in it. It felt like that type of place. And so the house or area will be the happy place, and just having, all of us as a young family would be ideal.
Okay. Yeah, that was a good house. Those are good days for sure.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, with the house on the Erie, when you went off to college and I took over your bedroom, and I kind of made it a, more of a masculine space where I draped it out with posters of Run DMC on one wall, LL Cool J on another wall, and all my favorite basketball players at the time on the other wall. How did that make you feel as far as, did you feel like you were being pushed out the house indefinitely when you came back and saw your room had been taken over?
You know what? It's funny because I don't even remember the room looking like that. I always remember it looking the way I left it. So it's like that's still my memory of the house. And so I guess subconsciously, no, I didn't feel pushed out. I just felt like that was the way it was going to always be. So, yeah. But I knew that would never be a house that I would come back to. I don't know how, but I just knew that. Yeah.
That's a good point. I don't think you really came back that often before we moved out.
Yeah. Yeah. So what would you say that you are most grateful for in life?
Initially it was Ayana, having my first child. But then Ayana had a child. And so I didn't think watching Ayana be born could be topped until I saw pictures of Rain and got to meet her for the first time. And so being a granddad, pop, that is definitely like one of the most special moments or special things for me. Just seeing her mature from a little infant into the little toddler that she is currently, coming up on two, and seeing her personality grow the way that it has, and seeing Ayana in her. And I guess the reason I love seeing Rain so much is because I love seeing Ayana be a mother too, right? And so it's kind of double folded for me.
That's true. Yeah, she's definitely all Ayana. So can you describe a moment that you think you could have done something better?
Freshman year, me and all of my buddies tried out for the freshman basketball team. Me and all my buddies happen to be about the same height, so we're all fighting for the same position and didn't realize it until we started actually getting cut. So we were all about 5'3 at the time, 5'4. The taller friends may have been 5'7. And we could all play, we're all good, but I definitely felt like I was a standout basketball player among my peers at the time. And so freshman year, when not only we were fighting for the same spot, there were some kids that had already been kind of brought up for the spot through AAU leagues and things like that. And up to that point, I really didn't know what AAU was or those type of basketball leagues. So I had never participated in them. Didn't realize that gave the kids that I was going against a leg up because the coaches were already watching them, already had a spot for them, pretty much. And so I made it to the last round of the tryouts, but ultimately got cut because I was too flashy. And so, you know, I was playing street ball, where the other kids were playing structured basketball, which is what the coaches were looking for. And you know, I would do like flare passes like Magic Johnson, the round the back, no-look passes, and through my legs and, you know, through the defender's legs, and I was doing all this wild stuff. And I thought I was a short end because, you know, didn't nobody look as good as me on the court at the time. But when I got cut, I didn't handle that rejection well. And so after that, instead of going back to the court and actually starting to work on a skill and craft and developing it, I just kind of quit. And I just turned the directions and stopped playing basketball pretty much as on a competitive level. And so handling rejection would be something I definitely want to do better.
So what trait do you most admire in yourself? And then on the other hand, what trait do you least admire or wish you could change?
So the one thing that I really do admire about myself is I'm willing to take risks. When I was graduating from high school, I talked a buddy into this wild ideal that I had about college. We weren't real serious in our education, and so we hadn't really made any solid plans about going to higher education. But I got this ideal fixated in my head where I talked my buddy into this, and so I said, we're going to go to Bethune-Cookman. I don't know why I chose Bethune-Cookman. I think it's because it's in Daytona Beach, and I just saw, in my mind, all I saw was sunshine and beach. HBCU. And so I said, we're going to go to Bethune-Cookman. And we hadn't applied yet. I said, we're just going to load up our bags, our duffel bags. We're just going to drive down in my buddy's car, because he had a car I didn't. We're just going to drive down, and we're going to go to the administrative building, and we're just going to enroll. We're just going to stay and live on a beach until they give us a dorm room. And so we were real close to going until I think I ended up going to Dallas to stay with you all that summer. And then I applied to Jackson State, and that same buddy actually got accepted into Jackson State before me. And so I applied to Jackson State, and then I think I ended up getting accepted into Texas Southern. And so I was planning on going to school at Texas Southern. But while I was waiting for school to start, Jackson State sent me an acceptance. And so since my buddy was there, I decided to go to Jackson State. But just being able to make decisions like that on the fly and being willing to put myself out there to take a chance is definitely something I like most about myself. And then I guess the trait that I least like about myself would be procrastination. I put myself in a bind like 90% of the time, and I it's almost like I don't function until I feel the pressure of needing to have it done. Like if you give me 3 weeks to have something done, I don't feel creative, or I don't feel the edge to do it until it's like 3 days before, and then I start scrambling. And then the night before, I'm up all night trying to finish it. And so if I get better at managing my time and avoid the procrastination, I think that'd take me a long way.
I agree. That must be a family gene because I have that same gene. So tell me about one of your most difficult memories.
I mean, there's several, but I guess one of the most difficult ones would be when I lost a buddy in high school to a tragic murder, Terry Barber. And up to that point, I hadn't lost anyone that was young. And so to lose a friend at that age, when I was still that age, was really hard. It was a tragic loss where he was murdered on a bad drug deal he was selling, apparently. And it was like the drugs, he was handing the drug off to somebody in a car, and the person grabbed his wrist and then pulled his arm in, and then they drove off with him hanging outside the car, and drove into like several cars with him hanging out. And then after they banged him up enough for his body to be limp, they just let his arm go, and he just died in the street. But Terry was a really good kid, and we had known each other since I want to say elementary, middle school, definitely middle school, if not elementary. But he used to come by the house in the area, and we'd play a lot, and he would stay the night. He stayed plenty of nights at the house, and I used to go over his house and stay the night and get terrorized by his big brother. You know, he'd treat me like his little brother when I was over there. And so, I mean, he was just a good kid, had a great smile, was really athletic. He could do backflips. He just learned how to backflip on his own. And so he would jump off porches and do like three, four backflips and land, on his feet. And he would be able to do the backflips from one end of the field to the next nonstop. And he taught himself how to do this that type of stuff. So if he would have had more direction, I think he had potential that he never had a chance to reach. And so that's a hard memory for me.
Yeah, I didn't even know that. Wow. That's a good question to ask. Let's see. In light of that, would you say that you are afraid of dying?
No, after dealing with death repeatedly at a young age, I really had to come to grips with it. And so I've put a lot of thought into, death, and I'm not afraid of it. I know it's ultimately something that transition that we all go through. I guess the one thing that I am afraid of is not sharing enough before I pass. And so I hope that I have a chance to share more of myself to my loved ones before I pass.
Do you have any regrets?
The only regret I really have is when I was in college in Chicago. I was going to Columbia College, Chicago, after I dropped out of Jackson State. And I was going to school for audio engineering. And The thing about going to Columbia College is the alumni is really strong in the entertainment business, and so you have immediate access to all kind of producers, directors, engineers, musicians, actors that are like award-winning, Grammy, Oscar, whatever the top awards are, they have alumni that have all won those awards. And so I immediately had this network of people that I started communicating with and working my way up to be a part of the team. And my department had even had a took a real liking to me, and so he used to give me a lot of freelance work. And I had a mentor that was a working professional. He was the location, he was the house mixer for Janet Jackson at the time, Nancy Wilson, Gerald LaVert, and a whole bunch of well-known artists. And so he started spending a lot of time with me, and I would take like work I would do in the studios over to this house that I was recording and engineering, and he would analyze the recordings with me and tell me what levels were off and show me how some sounds were canceling each other. And we really developed a friendship. And as I was getting closer to graduating, he told me, because he also knew that not only that I was into doing studio recording, but I was a location recorder for film. And so he had a friend in Hollywood that was really established as a location recorder, and I think he had won a couple Oscars or something. And so he had offered to connect me to his buddy if I wanted to move to LA. And so I thought about it, I told him I'd think about it. And so I had him as a connect, immediate connect, if I wanted to go. And at the same time, I had another buddy that was just coming out the industry. As an actor, he was on a show called For Your Love, and he was one of the main characters. And I think For Your Love at the time had been on air for about 6 seasons, maybe it had Holly Robinson Pete on it. And so he had just came out of that, and so he had a house and he was doing other things. And he offered to give me a place to stay while I got myself together. And so I had a place to stay, and I had two celebrity friends that were gonna help me get started, and I didn't go. And so I always kind of wonder, how where I would have ended up had I gone.
Wow. Well, that leads right into the next question is how has your life been different than what you'd imagined?
I don't think it's really been different. I mean, I always knew I would probably bounce around from career to career, and I always knew I would probably never really live in one location too long, which is pretty much how my life has been. I guess the one thing that I thought would be a little different is by this age, I would have slowed down and settled down and started to be more family based, like as far as having besides Yana, having a family that was like in house. But I truthfully, I'm not surprised that I don't. So I don't think my life is any different than I anticipated it to be.
So just to expand on that question, do you hope to one day get married?
No, not really. I think marriage for me is just something that's gonna have to happen, where me and the woman that I find that I fall in love with on that level, we'll have to both feel it, and it's probably something we'll have to act on pretty fast. Like it'll probably be an unplanned marriage if I get to that point.
Is that before you can change your mind?
not only before I change my mind, but before I start to sabotage the relationship. I seem to have a way where when things get too good, and I start feeling too comfortable, it kind of takes me out of my realm. And so I start to do things unintentionally, intentionally, I'm not sure. But things just start to happen where I just start to tear it apart. And so, you know, if I commit and the person I'm with commits and we both feel like we're true to our commitment, and just do it, then I think I would see it through.
What are three things you would do if you had unlimited resources?
Unlimited resources? I would eat a lot better. I would have a chef, so I wouldn't have to think about it. And I would just, you know, make sure they were specialized in cooking healthy meals. I would travel a lot more. I travel a lot now, but I would like probably travel a lot more, like more extended travels. And I would definitely take family with me, so it'd be more of a fun trip. And then I guess the third thing is I would probably give more. I definitely would give more.
Which makes sense since we come from a service oriented family. So to hear you say you give more makes a lot of sense. And we do like to travel also. So do you think it's hard being one of the cool uncles? Is that a hard job?
I mean, it comes easy for me. I guess the hard part is when you're the cool uncle and you do normal stuff, when the kids come by and you're just kind of sitting around relaxing, and you're not as cool as everybody thought you were. When you're cool outside the house, you're like, you know, sometimes a cool uncle has to recharge. You know, you just got to kind of sit down and relax so you're ready for those moments to be cool. So I guess that's the hardest part is, you know, getting people to see that you need time to recharge to continue to be cool.
What kind of things do you do to recharge?
As little as possible. You know, I try to just relax. Sometimes I just like to sit in silence and just kind of do like a meditation. Definitely like to do yoga, to kind of recharge and slow down. And take walks. I like to go walk in the park and hit the trails and things like that. Just take in nature a little bit.
Have you experienced any miracles?
Any miracles? So there was one time in Chicago, I was coming home from school, and I lived in the west suburbs, and I school was in the south loop, and so I was driving west from downtown Chicago on the highway, and it was, you know, it was Chicago traffic, so it was like bumper to bumper, but then the traffic started to flow, and so it really opened up and traffic was flowing, and then suddenly the car in front of me just stopped, and I don't know if I was like trying to change the CD or something. I looked up and it was just stopped, and it was almost no time to respond. But at that moment, it was like the world went in slow motion, kind of like how athletes talk about when they have incredible plays, how everything slows down and they're kind of moving in real time, but everything around them is moving slow. It was kind of one of those moments where everything just slowed down. I was able to just kind of maneuver around the vehicle, jam my brakes, and I pulled over, and turned out the person was having some sort of medical emergency. And so I got out the car to see what was going on. First, I was, you know, kind of pissed. You know, I got out the car ready to be confrontational, but then I saw that the person was having a medical emergency. And so, you know, by then, I think the police or the ambulance were already on its way. And so I just got back in the car and went on my way. But that definitely could have ended bad for me and for the person that was in the other vehicle.
Yeah, wow. I'm glad to hear that it didn't. So for future generations of your family listening to this years from now, what would you want to pass on to them? What words of wisdom would you have for them? Or just what would you want them to know?
I would just want them to know that family is important, and you know, we gotta maintain a bond, a connection. You know, kind of like what we do with the kids now. We try to keep the kids together so they know each other, and they build relationships and have stories to share and talk about. And you know, when our parents were still around, they used to all, when we had family get-togethers, they would all fight and laugh and tell stories and get mad about stories and laugh and then hug it out. And so it's important to have those moments as a family, especially for the kids behind us. And so I definitely want them to see the importance in that. And even, you know, through those arguments, just push through it and see the point or the different point of view of the person that you're arguing with. And eventually you usually grow to understand that, you know, there is a difference. It may not be your opinion, but it was that person's opinion, and so that matters as well. But I mean, that's the main thing, is just to maintain strong that family values.
Very good. Yeah, just being able to see the resilience of bouncing back is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. If this were to be our very last conversation, is there anything that you'd want to say to me?
I would definitely say I love you. And, you know, I definitely let you know it's going to be okay. You know, whatever, if it was me going to the other side, I'd tell you I'd see the light, I'd be all right. If it was you, I'd say, make sure you're looking at the light. Don't be looking around. Just pay attention to the light.
Good advice. I love you too. Let's see. Is there anything that you've never told me but want to tell me now?
I think I'd tell you, but I'll just tell you again. You know, I really appreciate how you stepped up through our tragedy with Bakari. You know, at a time where it was hard for all of us and we were all struggling in our own way, you have led the way in taking that pain and making it your point to have a positive impact, you know, as a result of that pain. And so I really appreciate that. You haven't always been the person that wants to be in the forefront, but, you know, you being the mother of Bakari, we kind of didn't have a choice but to go off of your energy. And so you accepted that position and you've taken it and ran with it. And so I really think you've built something special. It seems to continue to grow, and I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. How did losing Bakari impact you overall?
You know, I definitely struggled with it the first couple of years. You know, I was really mad about it, and I had some anger from it that I had to resolve. But it has definitely opened me up to see the disparities, you know, between Black and brown people, not just in the U.S., but it has opened my eyes to understand it's a global issue. And it was one of those moments where I never thought it would happen to any of us, like, us, our kids, because we've all kind of grown up in a good way where none of us were out doing anything that would put us in that type of position. But after Bakari's incident, I really had to come to grips with, racism can happen to anybody, and it does happen to anybody in it. Sometimes it just happens by chance that you're in the wrong place at the right time for something like that to happen. And so I think as black people, a lot of times, if something like that's never happened to you, when you see it happen, you kind of point the finger at the victim. And you always wonder what was that person doing to create that issue, or why was that person in that place? Or, that person should have knew, something like that was going to happen if they did such and such thing. But when it's happening in real life, you don't have time to have those type of thoughts. You're just doing what you're doing naturally, and then, trouble just comes your way sometimes. And so it really opened my eyes to that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Until you've been through it, you can't really speak to it
Yeah.
because it's such a hard thing to deal with.
And not only that, you just a lot of times you're in denial where you don't see it. You don't want to see it.
Very good point. Well, one last question. Is there anything that you have been wanting to ask me that you have not?
Who was the most influential person in your life?
That's a good question. I had probably three, which would be mom, grandma, Florence, and Big Ma, and all for different reasons, but definitely kind of what you said about mom, and she would be my kindest person for sure. But I just learned different things from each of them. And so if I could, I feel like I'm a combination of the three. And hopefully I've taken the best out of all of them to become who I am. But yeah, they all just had so many different things, whether it was, learning to be an entrepreneur, learning to cook, learning to pray, how to increase your faith, how to forgive, how to love your family unconditionally. So yeah, unfortunately, I can't pick one. I picked three.
That's fair. I see all three of them in you, so it makes
No.
sense.
Well, good. Thank you. All right. Well, thank you for your time. I really appreciate you spending your Saturday with me.
Yeah, no worries. I appreciate it as well. Good talk.